Hello, 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 and welcome to the local edition on a Thursday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. In the second half of the show, we'll learn what's happening in winter sports right here in Sullivan County, the high schools. But first, it's Thursday on the local edition, and usually we have the one and only Philip Pontuso, the managing editor for the Hudson Valley Times Union Bureau, letting us know what's happening in our neck of the woods. So, Philip, welcome back to the show.
Always good to be with you.
All right, so let's start off our night with Newburgh. There was a settlement with this with the Tyrell Fincher case in a police shooting. So can you sort of walk us through what happened that night and what's the sort of the latest?
Yeah, so this was a really big story at the time in 2020, and it kind of got subsumed by some later stories, which I'll get to. But in this man, Tyrell Fincher, he was 26 years old. He was shot four times following an altercation with Newburgh City police officers on March 27th, 2020. The police were after him because he was wanted for criminal possession of a weapon and had attempted to flee. This was a huge deal at the time because it was, you know, this was a couple of weeks into lockdowns. People were really pent up. And of course, just a couple of months later was the killing of George Floyd by police in Minneapolis, which prompted, you know, a resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement and nationwide protests. This happened before that, but it was certainly, I think, part of the same cultural ferment that was happening at the time. So the fatal shooting occurred, right? And basically right away, there were protests. And partly that was because of the initial narrative. The following day, Orange County District Attorney David Hoover said that Fincher shot first and that police had to shoot back. That's because one of the police officers was shot in the shoulder during the incident. But it was later determined that that shot had come from friendly fire and did not come from Fincher himself. Mm. Fincher, who did have a gun on him, that gun was not fired during the altercation. In October of 2020, a grand jury declined to bring any charges against the officers involved. And the state attorney general's office, which is required by New York state law to investigate cases where police use deadly physical force against civilians, declined to take the case because Fincher was, in fact, armed. That's according to a release from the Orange County District Attorney's Office. So this case has kind of been hanging out since then. After the grand jury declined to bring any charges, Tyrell Fincher's sister, a woman named Twanda, who is now overseeing his estate and is the guardian of his child, she filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the city of Newburgh and against the three officers involved in the shooting, one of whom, should be noted, had had substantiated past incidents of police misconduct, and including the excessive force.
Wow.
That lawsuit alleges that Fincher had pulled out the weapon that he had, which wasn't working, and had waved it away to display, quote, a lack of hostile intent. There was also a department-wide email that had gone out beforehand urging police to use caution when encountering Fincher. So that wrongful death lawsuit was filed in 2022. Sometime a couple of months ago, we don't know exactly when because it hasn't been publicized. We just got a tip about this. The city settled that lawsuit, and we don't really know. We can't say much about what it was settled for because it was subject to a confidentiality agreement. But we do know that there was like a payment involved, and the attorney told us, quote, they wanted to have the truth about what happened, and they felt in their depositions that were conducted that they were able to get a better understanding of the situation.
Wow. You know, I was just thinking, you know, with the city reaching you know, this confidential settlement, you know, are there any questions that still remain for like either the family or the community?
You know, I think I can't really speak for the family. They declined to have an interview. Certainly they wanted, I think, more details about what happened that day. But, you know, according to the attorney, they were satisfied with what they learned during the exchange of documents as part of the case and during the deposition. For the community, you know, like, it's also hard to say. I think that there's been some changes in Newberg leadership since then, particularly in how and who's in charge of law enforcement. And they have much more sort of quality control over how city agencies and officials release information. Because a big thing that kind of inflamed tensions here was DA Hoover coming out the following day saying that police were justified because Fincher fired first, and that was wrong. Now Newberg, I think, exercises more control over how they release information than any other city that I cover in the Hudson Valley. It's actually quite frustrating because they basically route all inquiries to any city agency or department through one city spokesperson, and it can take like longer than it should to get information from them, and they're not always super forthcoming.
Right.
And then, you know, to the bigger question, I guess, of like, you know, or the bigger issue of like lingering questions, you know, this happened, as I mentioned, right before what became a massive nationwide reckoning about police. You know, the following year, then Governor Cuomo issued an executive order that mandated all police departments to undergo a thorough review of their policies, and many cities formed civilian review boards. And, you know, as we're going to do some reporting on later this year, it's unclear what, if anything, those efforts really led to. Certainly not too many systemic changes. And I think there's still a lot of, you know, disquiet in Newburgh generally about the relationship between some residents there, certainly, and the police department. Mm-hmm. Whether that can be answered by anything in this case is hard to say, but I think that certainly contributed to some of the that kind of like mistrust, maybe contributed to the feelings that this case engendered.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you so much for bringing this this case, the story back to us. Because as you said, it's happened almost 6 years ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah. March 27th, 2020.
Let's move along here. You have another story that has some national appeal here. A comedian is facing some backlash over some jokes about Renee Good, the young woman that was killed in Minnesota by ICE agents. What exactly happened here, and what exactly did he say?
Yeah. So this is a pretty shocking story. This is a comedian named Ben Bankus, I think is how you say it. He was he's a comedian who's I guess kind of known for pushing the envelope. He was performing a set at the Laugh It Up Comedy Club on the Poughkeepsie waterfront on January 10th, 3 days after Renee Good was fatally shot in Minneapolis by a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer. He made a joke, essentially making light of her death. He said that, quote, her last name was Good. That's what I said after they shot her in the face. And he goes on to say that he believes she should have been shot earlier. And he used a derogatory reference to her sexual orientation. Good was queer and married to a woman. And he also used a word that's considered a slur against those with intellectual disabilities. I think, unfortunately, perhaps for Mr. Bankus, there was a video of this performance, which has garnered so far about 10 million views on Instagram and YouTube, and, you know, is prompting a serious backlash as that video spreads around. So part of this backlash is that this comedian had 6 sold-out shows canceled at his next stop, on his tour, which happened to be the Camp Bar and Laugh Camp, which is a venue in St. Paul, Minnesota, of course, right across the river from Minneapolis. The comedy club owner said those cancellations are about ensuring the safety of the performer and the audience due to, you know, some of the comments that the comedian's been receiving. A local paper there reported that people have threatened to boycott the venue and have been picketing outside in protest.
Wow. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what was the joke. You know, this is not the first time that comedians have faced a backlash over, you know, I guess, ill-timed jokes or ill-timed humor of current events. You mentioned that they're protesting the venue, but even though the event happened afterwards, is that what is happening, or future future venues?
Yeah, he was scheduled to give these performances. He was scheduled to give these performances, but they never happened. Right. So like once the video of his comments, it's hard to even call them a joke, as you put it. Yeah. About Rene Good started going viral, that catalyzed protests at the venue where he was scheduled to perform next, which is the one in St. Paul. And yeah, as you noted, yeah, this is not the first time comedians have sort of faced backlash for comments about current events. It's not the first time that this specific comedian has faced backlash. He's actually from Canada, and in a profile in the Toronto Sun, from 2023, when he was running for mayor of Toronto, they said that he has a anti-woke sort of campaign. And he also had performances canceled in Ontario in December last year after making jokes about Indigenous people and residential schools.
Wow. So where do you go from there? I don't know what happens after you get that backlash, yeah. But has he made any comments on social media or anything like that? Sort of either trying to defend it, his jokes? Yeah.
Not that we've seen, and he didn't respond to a request for comment that we sent him.
Well, so I guess we'll figure out what's going to happen next with this guy here. But let's bring it back a little more local here. Amtrak is restoring Albany, New York City service. You know, what changes will riders notice, you know, when there's a full Empire service train is restored, and how do you think that will affect the daily commuters?
Yeah, so this is basically the first time since, I think, the pandemic, the Empire service has been fully restored. I think what riders are going to notice is more offerings. And hopefully, you know, more timeliness of the Amtrak trains. You know, partly why the trains were delayed was for remediation and reconstruction work on the East River Tunnel. That is still in progress, but I guess it's there's enough progress that's been made that they can begin to restore Empire service to the full capacity.
Right.
And there is one sort of bad sort of consequence of this, I guess, which was that a plan that was announced in October that was going to run a couple of Metro North trains between Albany and New York City. I think one per day was going to run on the Hudson line all the way up from Grand Central to Albany Rensselaer Station, making all the regular Amtrak stops north of the regular Metro North terminus in Poughkeepsie. That plan is now on hold, which I know affects some people. You know, that plan was proposed and put forward by Kathy Hochul in agreement with the MTA, which oversees Metro North, to fill the gap, basically, of reduced Amtrak services. And now the Amtrak services are back. So the same number of trains are going to be running, but Amtrak goes to Penn Station and Metro North goes to Grand Central. And for a lot of people, you know, Grand Central is more convenient. Mm-hmm. So that plan is now on hold. I thought it was kind of cool that you could take the Metro North all the way to Albany at least once a day, but
yeah,
sounds like that's not going to be happening anymore.
Oh, boy. Are ticket prices expected to sort of stay stable, because I understand there's a $99 fare cap?
Yeah, this plan doesn't change ticket prices.
Okay.
Although the ticket prices on the let me retake this, because I think it was just Metro North ticket prices that went up.
Okay.
Yeah, this plan doesn't do anything to change the ticket prices.
Okay, gotcha. And I just want to go back a little bit just to understand. It was on pause because of the tunnel that was being built. Is that right?
They had reduced commuter trips between Albany and New York City due to the East River Tunnel repair project, which is reconstructing two of the four underground tunnels that connect rail service north of the city into Manhattan.
Okay, gotcha. Is there sort of a start date or something like that?
Yeah, this is supposed to happen by early March, according to Governor Hochul.
Okay, right. I said that it was previously suspended, and combined trains expected to return to regular service at the levels being reduced last year due to the tunnel work in Manhattan from the Times Union. Okay, just want to make sure I have that information correct there. Wow, that's a lot of coverage there. Well, Philip, anything else that we have not touched on you want folks to know about, or anything that's sort of coming up for the Times Union?
Just stay tuned to all of our coverage at timesunion.com. And if you're a Hudson Valley reader, timesunion.com/Hudson Valley.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much. We'll talk to Philip Pontuso, managing editor for the Times Union. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We'll learn what's happening with winter high school sports in Sullivan County. We'll talk to the sports editor for the Sullivan County Democrat. It's Thursday on the Local Edition, and I'm your host for this evening, Patricio Robayo. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is a really novel legal theory. What the lawyers in these cases and the plaintiffs are trying to do is to get around that legal shield that the social media companies have been able to use to protect themselves in court. And they're saying, no, this is actually not about speech at all. This is about you companies creating and engineering technologies to be harmful.
I'm Rachel Abrams. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
This week in This American Life, 911 calls about ICE agents from around the country.
I've got two vehicles that are in Border Patrol and they're following me. And I'm a U.S. citizen. And there's actually four of them trying to ram into my car. Can you please send someone ASAP?
They're calls from emergency rooms, business owners, and immigration agents themselves.
I'm a Border Patrol agent. They stole my uniform.
That's this week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Minneapolis under siege.
Trump wants Minneapolis to turn against people in their community that they see as their neighbors and their leaders. He wants to divide the city against itself, and the city is refusing to accept that narrative.
We'll hear from our reporters on the ground and from Jacob Fry, the mayor of Minneapolis, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
This week on Science Friday, it's been an especially bad flu season with more than 19 million cases in the U.S. Why so bad, and why did the flu shot whiff this year? Plus, in honor of the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show this weekend, a look at the muddy history of dog domestication. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to the Local Edition on a Thursday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. On the phone with us now is the sports editor for the Sullivan County Democrat, Crystal Tweed. Crystal, welcome back to the program. Recently, I saw that the winter sports guide came out in the Sullivan County Democrat. And before we get into the details of winter sports in the county, let's talk about what's in this actual winter sports guide?
Absolutely. So the winter sports guide, we cover all seven of our Sullivan County teams, and we either go to the school, myself and a group of freelancers, to take photos of each and every winter sports team, or sometimes they like to send them in and submit themselves into the paper. So that takes a little bit off our plate. But typically we'll either catch them at their school or at a basketball game, and we'll get photos of all the teams.
So let's remind folks what winter sports are up and running and what sports are, you know, and are currently in action and ready to go.
So basketball is in action. We've got cheerleading, skiing, indoor track is in session, wrestling. Trying to make sure I don't miss anything. But I think that is about it for winter sports. I said indoor track and basketball, wrestling. Yeah, I want to make sure we get everyone covered.
So what teams and or students are you sort of looking out for this winter season?
Specifically with basketball this season, there are a couple of local tournaments that Rockland School hosts one tournament, and then there's for the Fred Ahart tournament, and then also the Audra Sipple-Spath tournament. That's a girls' basketball tournament. And the Fred Ahart tournament is for boys' basketball. And those are really exciting because they feature most of our local schools. Back in December, right before we went into the New Year's holiday, was the Fred Ahart boys' basketball tournament. And Fred Ahart is a coach that worked with children, and the foundation was started by the Ahart family, and his mission was to, he wanted to carry on supporting student athletes or anyone in need. So that's the mission of the Fred Ahart Foundation. And they featured teams from Rockland, Eldred, Fallsburg, Pine Plains, and also Tri-Valley. It was a great tournament, and it's for a good cause. So that's one of the things that I really appreciated about it. His wife comes, his daughter comes, and it just makes it really special because they come and address the crowd and give some positive words of wisdom.
And for those who don't know, Fred Ahart was a legendary Roscoe Central School District athletic director and coach. He spent like 50 years leading the football and basketball teams, earning wins and multiple Section 9 titles. And Roscoe Gym is named after him, the Coach Fred Ahart Gymnasium, in his honor.
So the Audra Sipple-Spath, that tournament just went off last weekend, and thankfully there were no cancellations because of the weather. And that is in honor of a beloved teacher from the Livingston Manor School District. She also taught in the district for many years, and she died in 2022. And that scholarship supports a graduating senior who's headed to college, it promotes ethical character, community service, and the student needs to have a 3.0 or higher average. So those are the credentials, the criteria for that foundation. And that featured Fallsburg, Eldred, Tri-Valley, Sullivan West, and Rockland School Districts.
Okay, great.
And if you check out today's paper, today is the 27th, all of the games from the Audra Sipple-Spath tournament are covered, from the starting games to consolation and on to the championship round.
And we're just coming off a major storm here. So my question is, you know, how has this helped schools that have skiing clubs? And, you know, which schools do have skiing clubs? And are there any events coming up?
So Monticello has Alpine and Nordic Ski. And Sullivan West and Tri-Valley have alpine skiing. They will be skiing. They have a race today and also on Thursday, I believe, of this week. Thursday is the OCIAA Championships, and we're looking to get some coverage over there so we can feature some of our really competitive ski athletes who work really hard, and they're out there in the cold, you know, so that's a bit of a challenge on its own. But compared to last season, this season is much better. There's a lot more snow, so they have to make less. And I know, of course, with Sullivan County getting almost 18 inches, this is going to be ideal conditions for them to ski in, as opposed to last year. There was a short season because there wasn't a lot of snow on the hills.
Are the teams playing or not playing, but are they having events at Holiday Mountain now that it's up and running?
Yes, so Holiday Mountain hosts those events, and our local schools go and they ski there. I believe it's been once a week, but this week, since we've got the championships coming up, it's twice a week. And Nordic Ski, they don't ski locally, they ski at Minnewaska.
That's great that they could use that facility now. Well, Crystal, before we go, is there anything else we have not touched on you want folks to know about what to look for this winter sports season in high school, or anything you're working on for the Sullivan County Democrat?
So we're always racing to cover sports during this time of year. There have been a few hiccups because of the weather, but that is expected this time of year. Everything is up and running, from boys and girls wrestling also to indoor track and field. It just competed at West Point, and Sullivan West boys and girls are Division V champs. Tri-Valley, Division VI champs, and Monticello had a great showing for a lot of the individual events in Liberty as well. So everything is busy and in full swing, and I'm just looking forward to the season winding down to go to some championship rounds and sectionals and things like that for our local sports.
We were talking to Crystal Tweed, the sports editor for the Sullivan County Democrat, giving us an overview of winter sports in Sullivan County with the high schools. Crystal, thank you so much, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Patricio, thank you so much for having me again, and stay warm.
And that does it for the local edition on this Thursday evening. Again, I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. Thank you for joining me on the program. Stay warm out there. Remember, there are warming centers are open. If you or anyone is in need of one, check our website at wjfmradio.org for information. For warming centers in the Cascadophis of Pennsylvania, in Sullivan County, Ulster, Orange, and Pike County. Lucy, have a good night. Everyone else, take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills. From inpatient and outpatient care to primary, urgent, and specialty care with Garnet Health doctors in Sullivan County. Exceptional lives here. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
Hey, I'm Kimberly Izar, host of Farming Country. So I have some good news. There is still time to see the migrating bald eagles this winter. This week, Rosie Starr sits down with Don Hamilton, retired National Park Service resource manager, about what draws eagles to the Upper Delaware River.
I've always thought it was quite amazing how far some of these birds come from to this important wintering habitat we have here.
That's this week on Farming Country, Saturday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
On This Old House Radio Hour, transform your bedroom into the ultimate sleep sanctuary with sleep doctor Michael Bruce.
They now make bulbs that filter blue light but look white. So you can go buy this circadian lighting.
Plus, Chef Roy Choi takes us back to the Orange County Ranch House that shaped how he sees food, culture, and identity. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour. Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
This week on Cat's Cast, a conversation with legendary forest historian Dr. Michael Kudish.
And I opened up the first set of radiocarbon dates, and I thought 500, maybe 1,000 if I'm lucky. And my mouth opened up, and I was silent probably for 10 minutes, and the faculty going in and out, "Mike, what's the matter with you?" I said, "Well, one of them's over 5,000 years.
Saturday at 11 a.m., right here on Radio Catskill.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Adam Burke sympathized with the astronaut who said her husband is always calling her in space to find out where things are.
Honey, the Tupperware goes in the top drawer. It's not rocket science, and I should know.
I'm Peter Sagal. You can find this week's news quiz exactly where you left it, but this time with special guest John Chu, the director of Wicked. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Jeff. Join me Saturday at midnight for Electric Mountain. 2 hours of house, techno, indie dance, and more, plus sets by top local, New York City, and global guest DJs. From the underground to the highest peak, it's Electric Mountain, Saturday at midnight on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.